Hello everyone, welcome to our second podcast in this mini-series on climate adaptation. Last week, we were introduced to the science of climate change and how science and business can better collaborate, and we discussed that with Gail Whiteman. This week, I would like to introduce you to our guest, Henk Oving. Henk is the Special Envoy for International Water Affairs here in the Netherlands. Henk, welcome to our podcast. Really nice to have you.
Thanks, Rachel. It's great to be here. Great place also, looking out at the water.
Yeah, then we feel very connected with the water. Maybe we can start by you introducing yourself. Tell us something about your background, about the role that you have now, and perhaps something exciting you're currently working on.
Oh, wow, that's quite a lot. it's good to have this conversation. So I was appointed now almost 6 years ago as the first special envoy for international water affairs by the cabinet. The idea behind that was that since water is such a critical issue for climate recovery, but also the impacts on climate, that 90% of all disasters are water related, so we immediately feel impact of climate change. But it also now in the pandemic, how often do we say, wash your hands? Well, the whole idea behind that is that there is enough water to wash your hands and that it is also safe to use. Knowing that over 2 billion people in the world lack access to safe drinking water, over 3 billion to hygiene facilities, and over 4 to sanitation facilities, you immediately have the reason why water is so important, and the cabinet agreed to say we have to push this water agenda to the highest level. Second, so the urgency. Second, the Netherlands has something to offer. We're water champions, not only in building dikes and managing our rivers, but also in safeguarding water quality, ensuring that there is enough water, that water and food and our industries are well connected. So water cutting across all these issues of our society is culture in the Netherlands. So the ministers Ploemen, Schultz and Kamp from Foreign Affairs, Water and Economic Affairs joined forces and said we have to push this water agenda and bring the Netherlands in developing these solutions, promoting innovations and forging partnerships. And that's when they asked me to do this. I was at that time still living in the United States, working for President Obama's Hurricane Sandy Task Force in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. We'll probably touch upon that later. So water was already very much part of my working life and my personal life. And now I live with my wife down the river, you could say, not down the road, downstream on the Schiecentrale at the port of Rotterdam, looking downstream and upstream, and feeling very much connected to the water. So for me, water is also personal. In my role around the world, working with Dutch businesses, but also international partners, of course, local communities, all the way up to the United Nations and organizations like the World Bank, we not only try to promote more water awareness, but of course, better practices for water security for all.
It sounds incredibly broad, Henk. Like, it's water is such a broad topic, and then there are so many things you can achieve and that need to be done globally with water. How do you decide what to focus on? Because it's such a big topic.
The former Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, who now is the chair of the Global Commission on Adaptation, always said, also when working in the high-level panel on water, water is life. The moment you say that, that is on one end amazing and inspiring, but at the same time also very distracting. Because people say, well, it's life, okay, let's focus on our own issues. And then we immediately fall back to our siloed approaches, build on our interests we have often vested, so past practices. Because it is so broad, it is also very complex. And that was also it's still always the little tricky part. How do you move something that touches upon everything high on the agenda? People often respond back and say, okay, thanks, I'll go back to my business as usual approaches. So yes, it is broad. what we try to do, what I try to do, but I never work alone. I always do this with in partnership with organizations from the Netherlands and across the world. Of course, Venoort, but definitely also others, is to unravel this complexity. Show how important, because it is about everything, show how important it is for everyone and every stakeholder, being it an investor, being it a business, be it a government, an NGO, a community, or an individual. And the moment you're able to unravel this and show that this complexity is not something to be afraid of, but it's actually something as an opportunity, because if we can make those connections across social, environmental, cultural and economic needs and opportunities, the moment we find ways forward, then water is not the one that distracts us or destroys our assets or our community. Then it becomes the enabler. Managing water in the best way possible actually is a leverage and an enabler for that sustainability we need, for climate action that has impact, and for the investments that really create added value down the road or down the river, as you should actually say. Yeah. So yeah. What I try to do in my work is, on one hand, build that awareness by understanding research and showing how creating added value through managing water is actually delivered. Second, work on concrete projects around the world, show with the partners in the world that it can be done, that recovering after the disaster is not looking back, but looking ahead, and that we can actually prepare for a sustainable future. And the third aspect is do this by innovative projects, not replicate the projects of the past, but really look at the future and find novel ways forward in these partnerships to show that what we need to do can be done if we only are forward-looking. And then if we find these novel approaches, how can we then find opportunities to bring them at scale and really change the world?
Yeah, I think you touch on you're saying lots of things which is music to my ears, of course, Henk, also because partnership and collaboration is critical globally in all of these issues we're facing. And you've seen that with COVID, that's been incredibly important that people collaborate and partner, but it's also from our point as Venoord, we have an incredible skill set that we think we can bring globally to help address this climate situation that we're in, that we can really help to protect vulnerable people worldwide with our coastal protection solutions. But we're not going to do that on our own as Venoord. We need to find the right people to partner with, and that's not necessarily just within our normal technical sphere where we normally work, but also finding the right political partners, financing partners. You touched on that as well. So building those partnerships is really critical for us. So that's really great to hear you also address that topic. So I think it's so important for us to have these discussions and bring this to the forefront of people's minds.
To add to that, and I really applaud Venoord for doing this, and you see this across the water sector. And it is that those partners, those businesses, NGOs, governments, or even individuals that work on water understand, and that comes to this power of water, water not only has a connection to all these challenges, it also is the means to bring us together. So if you really work on water, you know, you can never do this alone. So it is not only an enabler in itself, but it also has this organizing capacity. And Venoord, as one of the key partners in the water sector, understands this by practice. Understand, if you work on water, you see the challenges, you also see the opportunities. And because of these connections with all these different aspects, you also see you have to find your partners across the projects where you want to deliver the results. So I think that comes with research, with understanding, but definitely also with implementation, funding, maintenance and operations, and ensuring that there is a continuous connection on working on water.
Yeah, indeed. And I think that's something that's been achieved incredibly well here in the Netherlands. It's like the showcase, the icon for the world, actually, about how to manage water and how to work with the right partners and successfully protect an entire nation that would otherwise potentially be with very wet feet.
Yeah, but we have to be very cautious there. We are only champions on water because we show our vulnerability too, and we show our mistakes and show our process of learning. And we can never, in the Netherlands, we have a saying: if you walk beside your shoes, it demands a real critical level of humbleness. We don't want to show off. The culture of working on water in the Netherlands is, again, these partnerships. It started more than 1,000 years ago, where we understood that a farmer, a business, a mayor, a city, a community could not bring water security by itself. It was a partnership that helped strengthen water security. It was institutionalized in the Water Authority. More than 900 years ago, we had our first regional collaboration on water, where all these stakeholders were already sitting at the same table. And that we scaled up across the Netherlands and brought to this helix of approaches where we work with all these different partners, institutionalized it in government, but also institutionalized in the projects and through the businesses and the projects you bring forward. But we should not show off. We should work with the world and say, hey, this is a culture. This is not a practice you can copy-paste. This really demands cultural change. And we're happy to work with you around the world. But we will do this in a very empathic and connecting and collaborative mode. And that humbleness should be part of that approach. So before you know it, we say, oh, we're the Netherlands, we can do this. No. This is very complex. We learned this by default in disaster. Working around the world means also that we have to show this openness, this inclusion, that is such a critical aspect of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that that's also part of what you are doing in your role. It perhaps not showing off, but showcasing what we can do and discussing how did we achieve that and how do you achieve that elsewhere in the world. So I think that that's really powerful. A lot of countries can learn a lot from what the Netherlands has taken 1,000 years to learn and develop.
I was very inspired by Secretary General Guterres when last year he said, of course, in the context of the pandemic, but also a lot of these disasters that are connected to the pandemic and make communities more vulnerable. He said, this should be a time of science and solidarity. And I thought, two pillars of the Dutch culture on working on water. Go by facts, our knowledge, our data, understand a system in its full complexity before you take action. But also solidarity, empathy, collaboration. And solidarity has an informal and a formal aspect. The informal is, of course, this culture of working together, bringing partnerships, looking out for one another, being very inclusive. But the formal part is also the institutional part. A good governance, that it is accountable and transparent, but also projects that you validate and evaluate and bring forward and learn lessons from. So I think critical pillars, science and solidarity in a way forward in the context of a pandemic that are so true to our heart in the way Van Oort and our Dutch partners try to work together around the world with all the other partners. So that's inspiring. So water, bringing this whole culture forward is in itself the best driver.
Yeah, absolutely. Inspiring is definitely the word that came to my mind there in that conversation as well. And I think also some pride for those of us who work for Van Oort in this whole sector and now have this fantastic opportunity to go out and share with the world and protect vulnerable people with the knowledge and experience that we have.
So, pride is great because it doesn't make you bigger, but it gives you the opportunity to open up. If pride, doesn't lead to arrogance, but to making connections, this is where pride is really inspirational.
Absolutely. You've also touched a couple of times on projects on being innovative, which the Dutch have also demonstrated was required and needed. But then how do you bring innovation through to scale it up to actually deliver the size and the solutions that we're going to need the coming period?
Yeah, I think that this is exactly my point, and I think it's the most critical challenge the world is facing. What we see with this crisis, post-corona, post-COVID-19, is that it's not about the money, the recovery. It seems like there's enough, public but also private. And if you bring that together, an explosion of investment. But do we have the right pipelines of investment opportunities ready? Do we have enough programs and projects to invest in? And then it becomes scary, because if you look around the world, the spending still goes to the unsustainable projects. The majority of our investments actually will make us more vulnerable instead of less.
Yeah.
So that is a scare. So we have massive amounts of funding capacity, massive amounts of euros, dollars, yens around the world looking for projects. But the opportunities we take from the shelves, and those are the projects of yesterday that are actually not progressing but regressing, that are reactive and not putting us forward on the way to the sustainable development goals, on the way to the to achieving the Paris Agreement. So there are many examples that do deliver, but they are still drops on a hot plate. If we follow the news and look at the assessment, it's over 90% that is unsustainable investment. So
That's shocking. We know
what to do, but the scale of it is lacking. So we need everybody, again, partners from practice, from academia and research to validate, from business and government, and of course the investors to show that these novel approaches that are innovative, that add value across the board, those are the ones we have to replicate, scale up, and with that scale, create the impact and the opportunity to really move towards more sustainability. And that's going to be the biggest challenge. Are we able to do this?
And it's absolutely a challenge that we are facing. As Van Oord, we've launched this climate adaptation action plan. We've created a tool to help us highlight where in the world those most vulnerable locations are that we want to step forward and support. But exactly touching on what you're saying, we've got these two key challenges. One, how do we get the investment for sustainable solutions? And I feel like as a business, a commercial business, sometimes we struggle to be talking the same language as the other people that we need to partner with. That's one thing that I have a concern about. And I think the other thing is we want to deliver what we call building with nature in our sector, but nature-based solutions. So working, for example, with a mangrove belt to protect a coastline as a natural coastal protection, rather than coming along and building a dike or a seawall, which is also a good method of coastal protection and has proven so in the Netherlands. But moving forward for those more sustainable solutions, building with nature, nature-based solutions, as we call them, how do we get financing for such a solution when it's so hard to convince someone that don't worry, these trees in front of your coastline, they're going to protect you, because people prefer to fall back on hard engineering where we can calculate it, where we can say, yeah, with absolute certainty, if you have a 1 in 100 year storm, this is what will happen. That's for me, from Van Oord's point of view, where we really see the challenge. So the language we are talking and getting financing for solutions that are perhaps more innovative or more nature-based, where we don't have necessarily yet the science to back up exactly what we're doing.
Well, this is the thing I challenge. I do think we have the science to back up what we are doing. We have to push harder, definitely, on those comprehensive, innovative solutions that add value not only for finance, but add value for society. So being it social, cultural, environmental, and economic. We do have the methodologies. The Nederlandse Bank 1.5 years ago presented this SDG report where it shows where are the risks. If you don't invest comprehensively, where are the opportunities? Bank of England did the same. Mark Carney is a great advocate on sustainable investment. We have all these tools ready at hand to show that investing, for instance, in water, has a trickle-down effect across all the SDGs. The challenge here is to show the full picture. It doesn't deliver you a profit for yourself on the short term, perhaps, but it gives added value across the partners you seek and down the road, down the river. I still have to in time. So the business case is never short-term profit-driven. The business case is value-driven and on the medium term. And that means that the partnership you work on the project is also the partnership you work on the investment. This is programmatically where you can run around with your dollars, you could say. Because all these partners benefit, but they have to share the burden and they have to share the created added value. And these type of programs are possible, and it's exactly those nature-based solutions, those innovative projects, those programs at scale that give that opportunity that the investment you put in place really gets a return down the road. And I think what we've seen in the past and until this day is that single-focused infrastructure investment create a certain type of value, but a lot of destruction. So best example is a road. There's always economic opportunity when you build asphalt. But there's a lot of social, environmental, and cultural destruction that come with it. And if you take that into account, all of a sudden the business case fails. And investors around the world are more and more not willing anymore to invest in these stupid infrastructure, these single-focused approaches. But at the moment when you take into account the full picture of what is at, you know, what are the needs are from the community all the way to the system, and you take the full picture of the challenges these investments faced from a climate perspective, a sustainability perspective, all of a sudden you come up with approaches that are far more comprehensive. And then you say, oh, these projects actually tick many boxes. It's not only about water security or flood safety, it's also about health, a better environment, and enabling a society, the reduction of biodiversity loss, and so forth. So the moment you see all these boxes being ticked, you create a more comprehensive partnership to invest in, and then that partnership can also share not only the burden, but also the delivered results. That means more programmatic approaches. That means more pipelines of projects that aggregate, that you can bring together, that and in a total can actually deliver on the promises we made. So I think those are the ways forward. This is what we can do. This is what Van Oord is trying to do. But project by project, it won't work. You have to find ways to bring projects on the scale of a region, a city, a delta or a coast together. And then through these partnerships, showcase how you can create that added value. And I think the other part is what you said about I don't want a tree in front of my house or the whatever. Infrastructure is always a nuisance. It doesn't really matter what it is. It's the conversation and the understanding that has to come with it that helps show what the added value is for everybody in that space. An environment, your environment, is not only occupied by one person, it's always used by many. If you bring them together from the beginning, so the community, the people that are at risk, the government, the businesses, and the investors, and you walk with them through this process of understanding risks, evaluating opportunities, validating those opportunities, and showcasing where that added value is created down the road, then you have them as partners. But if you develop a plan and say, hey, I have a good idea, then of course you really immediately have a reactive response instead of that it is proactive partnership and that you create ownership. Second to that is that ownership is critical importance for maintenance and operations. If there is no ownership with the community, with the business, with the investor, and with the government, the moment the project is delivered, then it starts to fall apart. Maintenance and operations is of critical importance to secure sustainable investment, delivering that added value for society. We know with non-revenue water, which is the leakage in our system, you know, many cities around the world have over 50% of losses of water, infrastructure that is failing, that is creating enormous financial, but also health and environmental risk. So maintenance and operations as part, again, builds back to that cultural question of how do you build ownership from the start? And if you want to do this, inclusion, partnership, collaborations are key. And with these partnerships come the business opportunities to start to invest in.
So really understand your stakeholder arena, understand who is important in this location and build up the story and take them with you in the journey.
And water risks and opportunities always give you an array of stakeholders. So that is why it's so amazing to work on water. It might be complex, but when you do it, you have these massive drive for inclusion and an amazing opportunity for comprehensive investments that really makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that I can say personally, for me, that's a real motivator. The amount of positive impact which you can achieve with these kind of projects, and I think it's good that you highlight you need to look at the whole life cycle, not just, oh, we're going to drop in and execute a project, but really what is the positive impact you can have through the whole life cycle. Yeah, that's what motivates me, that a company like Van Oord can have such a positive impact in this field by doing this in the right way and talking with the right people.
There are the three connectors. So you need a connection across systems and scales. So that means that you not focus on the projects, but on the system of how a river works, how groundwater works, how economy works, and so forth. You need to reach and build partnerships across sectors, individuals, institutions, and so forth. So that means that it is not only the connecting across systems, it's also the connecting across interests. And third is the connection across time. Look at this life cycle. Look back, but definitely ahead. Make sure that there is this life cycle approach. And these three levels of connections are about real comprehensive, integrated, inclusive, and sustainable approaches.
And now we're talking about approaches, but I think we're talking about on maybe a landscape scale. So you say a river delta or a coastline. Do you think that we need to move forward by doing? So basically you talked about that 90% of investment is still, if I can call it that, bad investment from our perspective. Do we need to demonstrate by doing so that we can start to shift the tide on that investment towards these kind of solutions? So we just need to show that you can have these projects on this landscape scale in a sustainable way, and then investment will start to shift? Or do we also need to somehow be actively pushing the financing people or trying to make sure we're talking the right language to them to get them to also start thinking along with us as well?
Yeah, it's both, of course. To your first point, we are already doing it. So it's not that there are not amazing projects. There are many amazing projects. Bringing them to scale still is hard, but there are many amazing and they're in these amazing projects, the financial sector is always part because there's always money involved. And we have the Swiss Re's of the world are already investing in nature-based solutions because they understand risks and they understand how to create value. The banks of the world. So if you look across the financial sector, there is a sliver of that financial sector that's already deeply involved in sustainable solutions. So moving them, you know, moving that 1% to 90% is where our, you know, this is our perhaps our biggest challenge. Doing this in projects, of course, is the best way. And finding partners to bring those projects to scale is going to be where we see the tipping point. The moment that 1% of sustainable investments becomes 5%, then it becomes 25%, and then we're done. And so then it, you know, then it starts to create this process of change. So that means a relentless effort to continue our work, do these innovative projects at a system scale, a landscape scale, as you say, building projects into programs to ensure that there are pipelines of opportunities, and never stop putting all these opportunities on the table of the investors. Because what you see now, and I think this is where the opportunity really is, but also the responsibility, there is so much money that is going to be spent. So on one hand, government and businesses, financial sector say, spend money to safeguard our economy and ensure sustainability across society. So money. Then the second part, the need is, where are the projects? Where does the money go? So making sure that those tables are filled with the business cases that, you know, that build into these programmatic approaches across system scales and coastlines is the opportunity, but also the responsibility we have together.
Yeah, well, then plenty of work for us to do right here. Do you also feel, because you've been in this role now for 6 years, that there's a momentum, and that also because the discussion about climate has grown, has become more important globally, and even in spite of COVID, I think we've seen incredible positive reaction also in regards to climate. Do you see a sort of momentum building, and do you see already this momentum building?
Yeah, I see the momentum, but I also see it's vulnerable. What you also see in society is that we want to go back to normal. COVID-19 reminds us of our vulnerability. Every disaster is like an X-ray. It shows vulnerabilities, but it also shows interdependencies. One vulnerability is never stands on itself. So if we look across the world, the pandemic is immediately connected to a vulnerability on water, environmental destruction, security across borders, climate impact, and so forth. Where do societies start to cripple? Not where there's only vulnerability to the pandemic and enough money to recover, but where that pandemic is actually connected to health issues, water issues, environmental issues, climate issues, and global security issues. So the momentum is there, but it is vulnerable because part of society still wants to go back to where we came from. And we have to show that going forward is a better way. Preparing for a future and investing in that future is better than investing in the past. Don't look back, but look ahead. And that is often, for a lot of people, scary. So again, partnerships are of critical importance. And then going back to Guterres, the partnership is also about holding hands, giving comfort, enabling others in this often insecure time, that investing in that future is not something to be afraid of. In understanding that complexity and taking a little bit of time to bring better projects to the table is not something to be afraid of. And we see it looking back. We can learn lessons. Stupid infrastructure always provided us with a lot of challenges in implementation, because they're not only single focused, the process of development and implementation was also not inclusive. What we saw, take Room for the River as an example, was it was not, there are not only 39 amazing projects in the Netherlands that are very comprehensive. They started with a process of collaboration. So that means learning from these type of approaches is not only that the projects deliver all these added values, but the process of collaboration, of partnership, of research, of understanding, of enabling and inclusion actually shows that we're all empowered. And that type of empowerment is of, you know, is of the same importance. I sometimes say, you need a million to spend a billion right. You need a million to spend in people, in data, analytics, and understanding, but also in partnerships, and then developing project opportunities. And with those business cases, we can attract the billions for sure. We often lack the millions. We often forget, let's immediately go towards implementation because we're hasty. But what we see now is that the haste and the massive amount of money that's on the table is only going to the past inventions, the projects we already have on the shelf. Now is the time to step up and put all those innovative solutions and to process to develop and deliver more on that same table and say, okay, let's partner and work on the sustainable projects of the future and not replicate the mistakes of the past.
Yeah, wow. Well, very powerful, Henk, and I hope we can achieve that and keep working away at that and spreading that message.
I will be very short, but I think for this conversation, what is important is the work you do. Yeah? The focus you have on coast, being so vulnerable, the hotspots you're choosing to work on are indeed the way forward. So I want to applaud you for that. Second, let's bring that message to this Climate Adaptation Summit. This is the first Climate Adaptation Summit we are hosting in the world. Everybody will be listening. Everybody will be there. So we have to message this out. And I think this partnership Van Oord brings, the challenges you show, how to overcome them, and the opportunities of partnering and collaborating and investing in starting this mechanism of replication and scaling up is really what we need. So thank you very much for taking these initiatives and the leadership role you take in the Climate Adaptation Summit.
Well, thank you, Henk, and for your continued support and for making time to have this conversation with us. I would like to wrap up and thank our listeners for joining us today. Next week, we're going to welcome Arnoud Molenaar and Johan Verlinde from the City of Rotterdam. We're going to discuss with them concrete actions on climate adaptation that cities can and are already taking to address the climate challenges which cities are facing around the world. So thank you for listening.